Today is Wednesday, April 15th, tax day. Today, 25th day of the month of Nisan. This is the women's chumash here. We're in the middle of Parshas Noach. Okay, Rabotai. We are up to Bereshit, Perek Chet, Pasuk Tet Zayin, Tezvav Tet Zayin, as Noach finally exits the Teva. So the Torah states, Vayidaber Elohim el Noach lemor. God said to Noach, Tse min ha-teva. I want you to leave the teva. Ata ve'ishtecha ubanecha uneshev anecha itach. You, your wife, your children and their wives with you. So we already pointed out Rashi's comment that the sequence of entering the teva and leaving the teva was pronouncedly different. The entering into the teva, the Torah stated, Noach and his sons entered, then his wife and their wives entered. That's how the Torah presented it, indicating that men and women were always to be considered separate, not to have relations and to reproduce, or at least engage in the attempt to reproduce during the entire Mabul. However, now that the Mabul is over and Noach is exiting the Teva, in order to highlight and emphasize that having marital relations and the charge to reproduce is once again in practice, the Torah rearranges the order and it says, Ata v'ishtecha, you and your wife leave, and then your sons and your daughters-in-law leave. So this is something that Rashi had mentioned. Now, the Rashbam here, as you well know, the Rashbam is the most absolute Pashtan around, raises the question, and he makes a broad sweeping statement that the word lemor, a phrase that we are familiar with 7,000 times in the Torah text, seems to have no place in this particular pasuk. No place. And I'll tell you what prompts the Rashbam's comment, and he makes a statement, and he's going to get himself into trouble based on the fact that the overwhelming majority of the time, it would be nice to use his interpretation, but it doesn't really sit well. If you look at any translation, any Chumash translation, how do they translate the word lemor? Saying.
As if to somebody else.
Oh, no, that doesn't say, that's not a saying. So, in the classic Vayedaber Hashem o Moshe lemor, it said God spoke to Moshe, saying.
Say to others.
Oh, so that's what we interpret, to say unto others. So tell me what would be the difficulty in this particular pasuk, if that's correct. Who's he talking to? There's nobody to say it to. It says, who's he telling this to? His children? Maybe his children. Maybe perhaps that's what it means. The word, the God's command only goes to Noach. And Noach has to relay the information to whom? To his wife and his children and his daughters-in-law. That's a possibility. And that might be correct. We typically interpret the word lemor, meaning to say unto others. Not just saying, but to say unto others. Because there's certain communications that were privy only for Moshe. And it says, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe, without the word lemor. Whenever the word lemor appears in the text, it's designed to tell us that this is not a personal nevuah, a personal prophecy for Moshe. It's to be shared with the rest of Am Yisrael. Now here, it says, Vayidaber Elohim el Noach lemor. So you can, if you wanted to say that, that's the way it means. God spoke to Noach, and Noach now has to share this information with the, you know, seven available other people. His three sons, their wives, and his wife. So lemor is to seven other people. Rashbam, for some reason, doesn't want to go along with that. And he says that every single time that the word lemor appears in the text, it's for emphasis purposes. And the way you emphasize something is by doing what? Repeating the phrase. Exactly. Exactly. Correct. Just make believe it said Vayidaber, Vayidaber twice. That's what he says. Now, I hear Rashbam. That's the way I hear that. But why is that so? Why is it so illogical to interpret it in such a fashion? What's the difficulty with a classic Pashtun of Rashbam? And he says that this is I'm telling you this throughout the Torah. This is the way you're supposed to interpret it. Every time it says Vayitzav, it means Vayitzav Olamar means Vayitzav Vayitzav. Really, emphasis. Why is it somewhat difficult to accept such an interpretation? Why, Rabbi Tai? Yes.
They didn't want to go out of the Teva.
What is that?
They didn't want to go out of the Teva. They liked it there. I don't know.
They what? They didn't?
They liked it in the Teva. They didn't want to go out.
Oh, so that's why in this particular case he has to use that emphasis. But why would it have to be Vayidaber? If the emphasis is not on the fact to go out, but the emphasis is to do what? Is to talk. Vayidaber. Repeat that. Vayidaber, Vayidaber. Hashem el Noach. That's what he's saying it means. It's a repetition of the verb form to speak. So when the Torah uses, when the Tanakh uses, you know, a double expression because it wants to create an emotional state, to emphasize, I can hear that. Pakod Yifko, I'll give you an example. Open up to Parshat Bishalach. We just read this seventh day of Pesach, so it should be fresh on your mind. Read it last Friday. So it's it's Shemot chapter 13 something. What pasuk is it? It's the fourth or fifth pasuk in the Chumash in Parshat Bishalach. Pasuk Yutet. Pakod Yifkod Elohim Etchem V'Halitem Et Atzmotayim Yehemchem. Pakod Yifkod. Hashbeya Hishbeya. Yes. When you're engaged in something, when you want to declare a verb form, and it's something that requires real powerful emphasis, I understand why the double lashon is used. The Jews have been in Mitzrayim for who knows how long. They just left. The Egyptians are presumably going to pursue them. They're worried stiff. So Moshe has to say, "Don't worry." Pakod yifkod elohim echem, and hashbeya hishbeya. Now it was done through an oath. That I understand. But the word Vayidaber Hashem Elo Moshe Lemar 1500 times, I need that the word Vayidaber should, you know, it could be a nice calm conversation just relaying a very simple mitzvah. Don't eat chametz on Pesach. Is that I got to get hysterical? Vayidaber, Vayidaber? You know, what's happening unusual that I should find the repetition of the verb form on such a regular basis? It seems to lose its shock effect if you use it all the time. Yes.
I think maybe it's like what you said before, Pesach, say that there was resistance, that here the world's been destroyed.
Okay, that's what somebody suggested. That perhaps, Pearl suggested it, that perhaps he just wasn't interested in leaving. So here it required that emphasis.
So
what, my point is, what word should have been repeated twice?
Either
daber
or
lemor. No. What word should have been repeated twice if the emphasis is to leave? Say. Say, menate. That we find. The verb form to indicate something to happen. Okay. But vaydaber is just a communication. I'm telling you something.
But in this case, I'm wondering in terms of resistance. Maybe if you go back to the old understanding, daber and lemor, he's telling his family to go back and live their normal life again. Because maybe they resisted having children. Because in the same way as the story of Miriam and Moshe, that the families decide, why should the families continue it now? The world was destroyed. Are we going to have another Mabul at some point?
Right.
Maybe the veil telling his family, we got to take Lot, and we're going to continue our life here. Don't care about Tashmish, we're going to have our own life again.
Right.
And we're going to reproduce. I don't know if you can think of that in terms of Beit HaBer and Lamor, the old understanding of Beit HaBer and Lamor. Hashem speaks to him.
And now he has to convince them.
Relay that to the family.
Okay.
Right,
but that's not, that's right. That I agree with you. I like that way. That God only speaks to Noah. They have no clue what's going on. And he now has to convince them of God's message. We're going out. And we'll see, he's not terribly convinced himself, Noah. But that would be the simple pshat, correct. And that's why I am so much, why am I making such a big deal? Because I'm stunned that the Rashbam, who is the classic Pashtun, would be so committed to this, which it just loses its effect around the Torah, you know. When you want to have double emphasis, you don't use that on a word that appears 5,000 times in the text. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. Good. So but that's again, that's more in line with the classic interpretation. Lamor means to talk to others, and Rashbam is telling us don't think that way. He says it is just double lashon for emphasis purposes, not to carry on a conversation. No response. Yeah. So the message which he sends him out is to say from the Teva, and you're correct, that there was no doubt a thinking on Noach's part that maybe I'm not too convinced that this ought to be. In fact, if you just take a peek for a second at Pasuk Yudchet, in light of what we just said, my opening words of today's class, my opening words, now look at Pasuk Yudchet.
It's back to the first way.
Ah. So they're going out of the Teva, but what is the order in which they're leaving?
Separate men
and women. Correct.
Maybe they said no thanks.
Ah, that's correct. Now we can speculate what might have happened. What may have happened?
That Noah wasn't convinced that the world is
gone. Correct. So give me two possibilities as to why they walk out this way. In relationship between God's message to Noah and walking out the way they walked in. Give me two possibilities as to what happened.
They don't want to reproduce.
Good. But what did happen, though?
What happened in between the...
Yeah, what happened in between... What happened?
No.
Did Noah share the message with them?
No. Or share effectively?
Possibly not.
Did he... Good. Those are the two possibilities. Did Noah share the message? Did he indeed fulfill the word Lamor? And what is now what's now happening? A solid, defined no by all of them. Or alternatively, what happened here? Alternatively, what happened? Noah never even bothered to make an attempt. Why did he not tell his children and his sons and his wife and daughters-in-law? Why? Because he wasn't convinced himself. How could I what? How could I convince others to do something when what? When I personally am... So therefore, what formation did they walk out? The men alone and the women alone. Prompting us to see that was the imagery that was created when they walked into the Teva. Because it's very possible that Noah did not communicate the message. Why? Because he wasn't convinced that that's the way to go. Yeah.
But it says Ito with him. So why do we ignore that?
No, it means they all went out together. They didn't stay in.
With?
Okay, I don't have a good answer as to why the word Ito is there. I don't know. That's a good question. I could find lots of questions, lots of places where it says the word Ito, and it doesn't really add much. It's quite obvious that he went out with them. Yeah.
They were very hesitant when they went into the Teva. They were afraid. They were hesitant. They didn't know what was going to happen. And here they're walking out the same way. They're still afraid. They still don't know. And they're still hesitant.
Correct.
About what life is going to give them.
No doubt.
The fact is that the men went out first because of our special God that attempted there. The women were fearful than the men. Once things happened, they realized they had to be a super last.
Right, okay. Yes, that's what he does say.
Isn't the nature
I'm sure this audience would love such a remark. Yes.
The nature of the bite is a bear and a more, one is more kind than the other, and the other is more from a din perspective or a lure perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he's not saying they more because they're not moving. By a bear is saying this is an order and not just a kind suggestion.
So, but then you're going to have to be the Rashbam's problem was the phrase appears 10,000 times in the text, and I'd like to be I have a standard interpretation for all times. So therefore that he says that he lays down the rule. He says this is what I'm telling you, and this is what's supposed to, this is the way you interpret it the rest of your life. And that's what I'm saying, it's a little difficult, that's all. But your point is well taken. So what does he tell them in Pasuk Yud Zayin? So they walk, he tells them to kol hachaya asher itcha mikol basar ba'of v'vavema v'chol remes haromes al haaretz hayitze itach, take them out with you v'shartzu ba'aretz ufaru v'ravu al haaretz, and let them, the animals, the birds, the creepy bugs, all multiply on this earth. On this earth. So if you take a look at Ibn Ezra for just a second. Here you go. Actually, don't look at Ibn Ezra for just a second. Just wait 1 second until you look at Ibn Ezra. So he tells them to leave. So let's see. Noach leaves in Pasuk Yuchet. Now it's repeated in Pasuk Yutet. Kol hachaya, kol haremes v'chol ha'of, kol romes ala aretz, lemishpichotehem yatzu min ateva. So Pasuk Yitzayin and Pasuk Yutet are remarkably similar, with one noticeable exception. Suddenly the word what? Lemishpechotehem arises. Now, you must remember Rashi's comment about entering the Teva and about reproduction in the Teva. For whom did the prohibition apply? Correct. They were not permitted to mate. So what question will emerge?
How do you get
families if nobody's reproducing? How do you get families?
That's sticking with their own kind as they came out to indicate that they would not violate the interspecies barrier, which they had been accused of.
Okay, so now take a look at Rashi. Rashi is going to hear what you're going to say, but he's not going to agree with you. Because Rashi's comment is going to be made on the Pasuk before. Look at the Rashi's comment in Pasuk Yizayin, Vishartzu Ba'aretz. And you shall multiply, where? In the land.
Velo Ba'teva.
Reproducing in the Teva was prohibited not only for mankind, but for whom? Magid, this teaches us, Sha'af HaBehimah Va'of Ne'esru
B'Tashmish. But previously, wasn't one of the reasons, part of the Hamas for which Hashem brought the flood was the interspecies?
Correct. So now look at Rashi's comment, Lemishpichotam. You're right on the mark. What does he say? Kiblu Aleihem Alminat Lidavek B'Minan.
To stick to their own kind.
Correct. When they leave, they're leaving, and they have to make a pledge when they're leaving. Not only did they what? Comply with God's request not to reproduce while they were in the Teva, but now when they leave, the Mabul's over, they have to pledge what? Not to return to what they did initially. What did they do initially? They intermarried. And that was Vati Male, Vati Shachei Ta'aretz. Everybody, all of mankind, all of humankind, all of lifekind intermarried. Now they have to make a declaration never to do that again. What is this sound? I'll take questions in a second. What does that sound like to you? And applying it to the animal world in a most unusual way. What does it sound like to you? What? What?
Kilayim.
No. That's the prohibition. That's the lo sarbia kilayim is the prohibition. But when somebody makes a declaration, what is that part of a declaration not to do what you did before?
Tshuva.
What part of tshuva is a two-part process. Karata al ha'av, to regret the past, and then what? Make a promise that I will not do it again. So here, in effect, God is securing from animal kind a pledge. It's so strange. It's taking the concept of tshuva and applying it to an animal that they now have to what? Have to take a pledge. We will never return to the behavior which existed earlier, which existed, you know, prior to the Mabul, which got us into trouble. Now, do you think that's the Pshat, Rabotai, or that's a Drash? That can't be the Pshat. Good. So now, I promise you, I didn't forget you. Another hour from now, I promise you, I'll always answer your questions within an hour. So now take a look at Ibn Ezra, and tell me what Ibn Ezra says in Pasuk Yutet, because he is a Pashtan. He doesn't want to accept such midrashic interpretations. Oh, where? Oh, says Ibn Ezra. You know why the text says Lemishpachoteim on the way out, not on the way in? Because on the way in, how did they go? A pair. If there were a kosher species with seven. But now how did they leave? Big families. Now, what was one of the problems, if you remember a lengthy radak from, I don't have it here, but we looked at it last time. What type of a problem might that create if he is right? If you build a teva with certain proportions to hold the existing population, and suddenly it explodes, how do they survive in the teva? So what was one miracle? What is one answer? Well, if God already performs, well, perform nacha miracle. Okay. Difficult. It is difficult. Yeah. That's. And in order to tell you that he believes that what he's saying is right, what is his concluding words? Look at Ibn Ezra's concluding words. Don't think it's so far-fetched. It's close to the pshat. Einenu rachok. It's not too far-fetched. Now questions. Yes. Yes.
So couldn't families be that the species went out, the lions and tigers and predators went out together, and the birds, you know, went out together, and the goats and farm animals went out together? Couldn't it be?
That's the simple pshat.
So it doesn't even have to be even Ezra's pshat. It could just be pshat. They went out as.
Correct. No, that's his first opening words. His opening words, Lemishbechoteihem, what does that mean? Kimo. Liminam.
Exactly.
That they left in an orderly fashion. Exactly. The lions go out first, then the elephants go out next. That's the simple pshat.
So then why does he add on that they violated the prohibition?
Because it never says any place that they're not. We've been reading into the text. That's correct. Yeah.
Yes. Mishpacha that we find?
I do not believe we've encountered it before. I do not believe. And it's used for animals initially. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't remember calling it's not in Parshas Bereishis. Eventually we use it for Klal Yisrael, Lemishbechotam Lebeit Avotam, for 50 times. But here the first time is for animals. Yeah. Yeah. So the Torah continues. Vayiven Noach Mizbeach Lashem, Vayikach Mikol HaBehemah HaTahora, UMikol HaOf HaTahor, Vayal Olot BaMizbeach. A Mizbeach, yes. We've had Korbanot in the past. The kind of have helped, but never it says, never says a Mizbeach, an altar. Now, did anybody plant this idea in Noach's mind to bring a korban? Did anybody plant the idea? Oh, so that's what Rashi's going to say. Rashi's going to say that indeed God never commanded him to offer any korbanot. Never did. Why is he offering korbanot? Because he understood that if God had told him that kosher animals are to be taken 7 of each and non-kosher only 2, what must be the reason to take additional kosher to offer korbanot?
A kayan offering.
Okay, that correct. Let's just see what Rashi says. Take a look at Rashi pasuk chaf. Mikol habehemah haTorah. Omar, Noach said to himself, Lo tziva li hakadosh baruch hu lahachnis me'elu zayin zayin, ela kidei lahakriv korban mehem. The only reason why God told me to take these kosher animals was for what reason? Because He wants to bring a korban. So you articulate the difficulties. You articulate the difficulties. What assumptions this is a Medrash Rabbah, Rashi is quoting it verbatim. What assumptions are the Midrash operating with? What assumptions? Enormous assumptions. What assumptions? That what?
That making through the Mizbeach was an obvious thing for him to, and that the entire whole table experience was for this moment.
Yeah, yeah. Where did you ever hear about a Mizbeach before? Who ever told about building a Mizbeach? Never heard of it. Who ever heard of him telling but offering a korban? Okay, but that was Cain was many was how 10 generations before Noah. You think that anybody in the interim were offering korbanot unto God? Perhaps. Perhaps. So the assumption will be, that's going to be part of your assumption, that this practice, this idea of worshiping a God is nothing novel. He didn't fabricate that all of a sudden. He saw the model. Not necessarily to God, but to other gods. But the practice of offering animal kind as a sacrifice to your God is something that he may have witnessed throughout the 10 generations and the generation immediately preceded him. That's one assumption. Correct. What other assumptions must the Midrash make? The what?
They didn't eat those animals?
Well, we don't see him eating. He has never been granted the license to eat. No one has been granted the license to eat meat thus far. No one. That's going to change in a couple of psukim. Yes? We don't know. We don't know what model he saw, because the Torah doesn't report anything about those 10 generations. Nothing. Not a clue. So everything that we say is speculating on our part. But what other assumption must the Midrash have made about Noach's awareness about these behemot ha-tohorot? Somebody told him that what? That what? That these are kosher animals. I'm not telling you to take 7 of these b'mikra, but why am I telling you to take these? Because eventually, when there's going to be another nation, what's going to happen? There's going to be a distinction between kosher animals and non-kosher animals. Otherwise, how would he have any clue that this animal represents a different type of animal to call it tehorah versus einena tehorah? How would he know Maybe it's just that God liked, let's assume cows, okay? Cows are kosher animals. God liked cows. Therefore, he told them to take seven. So it's making an assumption that the text, again, does not report on. Namely, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu somehow shared with him the fact that there's going to be a distinction between kosher and non-kosher. Or if you wanted to take the Midrash's approach with all of the Avot, what did all of pre-Torah Avot and everybody else already do? They all what? They knew the whole Torah. That's a Medrash also. That they studied the whole Torah. So if Noach studied, if you and me can figure out this Pasuk Chumash, Noach could also figure out the Pasuk Chumash. He studied the whole Torah. Okay? So it's a Medrash building upon Midrashic assumptions, one on top of the other. Assumptions, one on top of the other. That's what Midrashim do. Like to build a story for us without necessarily having documenting, supporting evidence for them. That's part of the Midrash's style. And if that's their style, you can't necessarily challenge it. How do you know you're right? I don't know. Don't know. I don't know. Now, Ibn Ezra here opens up his mouth and says, HaBehema Torah, look at Ibn Ezra, it's on your sheet. Pasuk Chaf. You said it. What?
Eser.
What is Eser? There were ten. Ten. How did he get to that? Mikol HaBehema HaTahora, says Ibn Ezra, Eser. V'lo noda mispar ha'of ha'tahor. What don't we know? How many kosher birds? But we do know, what are there? Animals, what?
There are more kosher birds than non-kosher birds.
So now, this is what Ibn Ezra says. So I'm asking you, ladies, to speculate, how did Ibn Ezra arrive at this guess that when it says Mikol HaBehema HaTehora, how many did it mean? 10 animals. But I am not going to speculate about how many birds. I'm not going to speculate about how many birds.
Where did he get 10 from?
That was my first question. Where did he get 10 from? Where did he get 10 from?
There are 10 different
names
for animals, it says here.
Good. Good. So Ibn Ezra surveys the rest of the Chumash and finds that there are only 10 different kosher animals ever specified in Tanakh. 10 kosher animals specified in Tanakh. Now, why doesn't he do the same thing about birds? Because I want you to look at Vayikra chapter 11. We're going to read it this coming Shabbos, so you'll get a head start. Unless you were in Israel for Yom Tov when you read it already this past Shabbos. And you're going to read it Shemini again. It's like people who are so worried. I'm going to miss Parsha Shemini. I'm going to hear Shemini twice. Miss Sazria Mitzorah. So chapter 11 gives us all of the laws of kashrut. Tell me what the kosher, I'm sure you know this. What are the kosher signs of animal, fish, and birds? What are they? Fish, animal is shosha, mafres is parsa and shasasa, that's one and the same, and ma'alat geira, choose its cut. Very nice. Split hoofs, choose its cut. Fish alert, anybody who wants a tuna fish? Fins and scales. Birds. What does the Torah write in their parsha? Don't. Here are the list of birds they're not allowed to eat.
Doesn't
say that. That's what the Gemara thinks is the common denominator. You're right. Torah doesn't say. Torah just lists X number of birds that you are not allowed to eat.
But we
Hold on one second. I was just going to mention turkeys. X number of birds that you are not allowed to eat without providing a sign for us. What's the common denominator? So first of all, how does this bind to Ibn Ezra? How does this bind to Ibn Ezra? That's why he can't tell you how many what? Birds there are. I have no idea how many kosher birds there are.
But if there are that many prohibited, there must be at least that many in more.
We don't know.
He
can't tell us because there is no indication for us. When you're dealing with the animal kind, number one, there are classic signs. Number two, the Tanakh identifies them.
Exactly which ones don't.
Correct. Here, all you know is you don't know which one's a kosher bird. That's it. You know which ones are not a kosher bird. Beyond that, what is the only way in which you can eat a bird? Tradition. Mom and pop ate a bird. Mom and pop and grandfather had such a bird. Must be kosher. That was the problem, and there are many tshuvot written about the turkey. Who in Western Europe or Eastern Europe had a turkey? Not a person on the planet. So my grandfather and your Zaidi and Bobby never had turkeys. So how do we know that a turkey is a kosher animal? Therefore, every Thanksgiving, this series of tshuvot appear. Where did it come from? So at least there's some discussion about it. Why some discussion about it? Because we don't know definitively one way or the other. We kind of know today that a turkey is a kosher bird. Because there are people eating turkey. But, you know, years ago, it was a discussion. So at least I'm just telling you where Ibn Ezra got his point of view from, 10, claiming that there are 10 kosher animals mentioned in Tanakh. I trust him. He usually knows what he's talking about in terms of Tanakh. Usually knows what he's talking about. So he brings korbanot, mikola beimata mikola fatahor, vayal olot bamizbeach, vayal olot bamizbeach. And here is another assumption. What other assumption is made in that very phrase? That it had to be what type of a korban? An olah. Kula khalil. Somebody had to let him know that little secret, that there is a difference between an animal which you offer part of it to God and an animal which is totally consumed. The really korban olah. What?
If you really don't know and have no guidance or no precedent, why would you think anything other than
okay, the logic would dictate that that's correct. I hear that.
I'm not saying that it's
I hear that. I hear that.
Especially if you're not yet eating meat, what are you going to do with the rest of it? If it did not yet occur to you,
that's correct. Part of it. That's correct, yes.
Also, I think after spending all this time taking care of all the animals and then to kill one like that, I think it's maybe also showing God that we know the distance.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very much so. That he instinctively knows the difference between the two, and that what is one of the purposes of God's creating the animal kingdom? To enable to serve man, even in terms of worship. Yes, no doubt. Vayorach Hashem et reach anichoach. God smelled this pleasant smell. Vayomer Hashem el libo. God said to himself, Lo osef lekalel ore ta adama bavur haadam. I will never curse the land on account of man. Ki yetzer lev haadam ra min urav. The inclination of man is bad from the time he's a young whippersnapper. V'lo osif od lahakot et kol chai kasher asiti, and I will not strike out against every living creature the way I have in the past. No doubt about it. pretty pessimistic. Now, the word ki is a crucial word in many psukim. We read the text based on the way you normally translate the word ki. We read the text and tell me, oh, this is ridiculous. And stop at the word ramin ura, because there is an esnachta there, so you're supposed to pause. Reread the phrase. What did God say to himself? I'm not going to curse the land on account of man, because what? Because he's so bad. Is that a good reason why I'm not going to curse the land? Because you're bad? If you're bad, what should God say? I'm going to curse them again. I'm just saying, normally the word key means, how do you translate the word key? Because. Because. Or I'm just, that's right. So here, lo osef lekaler, you cannot say key means because. Because man is so bad from the time he's a young whippersnapper, therefore I've decided not. You could interpret that. How does God, what's running through God's mind then? If I'm not going to take this oath, what am I going to be forced to do every single time? Every generation, we have to destroy. So because man's tendency is what? To be ra min urav. As a result, I have to make this oath, because otherwise, I'm going to wind up destroying everything I created all the time.
So why did he destroy them this time?
What?
He knows that. Why did he destroy them this time?
But why did...
Because he was hoping it would be bad. He knew that about this revelation.
Okay, so I want to point a subtle differences between the pasuk that you're referring to in a second. Or you can say, how else can the word ki mean in this particular pasuk? Not because, but what? Lamrot, despite the fact that what? Adam is ra min urav, nonetheless, what will I have done? I will not. So your question is a good one. Why did God think of this from the very first time? So now go back to Bereshit chapter 6, where this phrase appears the first time, and tell me one subtle difference that you see in the text, but it's a powerful one. Yeah, where it uses the phrase ki yetzer machshav v'chol yetzer machshavot libo. Okay, how is it formulated in our pasuk and in the pasuk in Parshat Bereishit in chapter 6?
Doesn't say
what? No, it says that they were ra. I'm referring to pasuk Perek Vav, pasuk Hey. Pasuk Hey. Vayarashen ki rabba rasa adam ba'aretz v'chol yeitzer machshavot libo rak ra kol hayom. What's the difference in that and this? Is one critical word that doesn't appear in the text here? No. What? Ah, that's good. Good. Rak ra in Bereshit. Ra in Noach. So, in answering your question, what did God see the difference the first time where he decided to bring the Mabul, and now this time? What difference did he see? God could not find one redeeming quality with society at the time before the Kutnar Mabul. It was rah, rah, kol hayayim. That's it. Now, it's just ra min urav, but not rak ra. There is a possibility that I will always find some redeeming factor within man. In which case, how does the word ki now flip on its head? How do you read now the entire phrase? If you look at it in opposition, as opposed to what it said in Bereshit, that v'chol yetzer machshavot libo rak ra kol hayom. Now it's just ra min urav. and I see that it's not completely rotten, not completely thoroughly rotten. So how do you read the phrase now?
So I think it would personally be when they're dead. No, this one would be when they're dead.
No, but what does it mean? Key. Lo osif lekalel. Why? Why lo osif lekalel, Adam? Ki yetzel lachshon. It's only ra minu ra. But what is it not? It's not rak ra.
So there's potential.
In other words, God says, I am making an oath with confidence. What confidence do I make? I don't think I will be able to find another generation where there is not one merit, not one redeeming quality on their behalf. I don't believe that such a thing will take place. What?
There's so few people now.
I know, but no, but he's taking through the perspective of history. Through the perspective of history. What? Oh, good, excellent. We're going to read now in a second that the opening phrase "Vayorach Hashem," God smelling the korban, is directly related to this. That's good. That's a sign of what? Of what's good. There is some good here. There is some merit. Exactly. That's the thing that tips God off. That somebody's offering a korban unto Him is offering. Tipping it off. That's correct. That's correct. I'll always find some justification for these people. Except, hold on one sec, for the famous Moshe Kusevitzky. You know, a lot of people hate Chazanim, right? But sometimes Chazanim say something and you see that they understand what they're saying. There is a tefillah, part of the lengthy vidui, which we say on Yom Kippur and by all Slichot. It says, Oshamnu Mikol Om. Translate the phrase. Look in any machzor. We are guilty than what?
Every nation.
So there's a famous piece composed by David Reutman in the early 1900s, which Kusevitzky once recorded in 1928. When he became the Chazan in Bethel in Borough Park, so the choir leader asked him in 1951, when he got the job, he said, Moshe, you want to do this piece by Slichas? And Kusevitzky said, not only am I not going to do that piece, I never say those words anymore. Since the show, I skip the entire paragraph when I say Slichas, even to myself. We, Am Yisrael, are more guilty than the Nazis? Or Shamnu, Mikol Am? I can't believe that. They were the most rotten people in the world. I'm not going to acknowledge or say, Oshamnu Mikol Am. Can't find any defense for them, but don't tell me that Am Yisrael has to say we are guilty in anybody else. When I heard somebody told me that story, Kusevitzky, I said, now I know why I enjoy his davening all the time. Because he knew what he was saying. He knew what he was saying. To say Oshamnu Mikol Am after the Shoah? Crazy. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I promise you, I will be able to find some redeeming merit in every single generation. In every single generation. Yes?
It's just an interesting phrase again. The first
yes, no doubt. Yes, no doubt. I want to conclude today by looking at the Ramban's comment by Yomer Alibo. Take a look at the bottom of the sheet. I don't know where he gets this from. The Holy Ramban. Vayomer Hashem Alibo. God said to himself, Lo gila hadavar l'navi bazman hahu. What did God not do? He did not share this piece of information with any prophet at that time. Rak biyom tzavoto et Moshe b'ksivat haTorah gila elav. Wow. Ki ka'asher hikriv Noach korbano, when Noach offered his korban, this is exactly what Nechama said, Allah lefanav l'ratzom, suddenly he found this incredibly pleasing. V'gazar shelo yosif lahakot et kol chai. And he now decided that what? He will never kill it. But he didn't tell anybody at that time. To whom does he tell it? To Moshe Rabbeinu, as he is writing the Torah. When does Moshe write the Torah? Actually write down the actual text? When does he do that? The very end of his life. The very end, that's when we find that Moshe told him, HaKadosh Baruch says, Kisvuli, write it down. At the end of his life. Ukvar kasafti bozeh sod nirmaz l'rabosein uzal. And I have already written about a secret that has been revealed to our rabbis at that time with this particular phrase. So I'm not lazy. I went back to the Ramban in Pasuk Vav, because it's very easy here. The editor tells you exactly where it is, the guy, the printer of the Chumash. And I went back to the Ramban there, and the Ramban says, what I have is such a holy secret, I can't tell anybody. And he doesn't say what it is. He does not say what it is. He makes one observation. He says, that's all I'm going to tell you. In all of Parshas Bereishis, overwhelming, which name of God is used in Parshas Bereishis? Which name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Elohim. Good. Now look, he tells us, look at Parak Vav, Pasuk Vav. Now look at Vav Vav. Just one second. Vav Vav. This is where he said to Lo, look at us. Vav Vav. Vayinachem Hashem ki asa et ha'adam ba'aretz vayit atsev el libo. Vayit atsev el libo. Ha. Says the Ramban, the great secret that I have is rooted in the fact that suddenly in this pasuk, which name of God appears? Hashem Midas Harachamim. That's all he says. And this is Soy Godol Nirmas Rabu Seinu, but I can't tell it to you. So speculate, Rabotai. Speculate. If he gave us a hint that suddenly on this pasuk, Vayinacham Hashem, and Vayit Atsev Elibo, Vayit Atsev, what does that mean? Eitzev. He's sad. Elibo. So tell me, what emotions, I'm talking with, running through HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mind as he decides to destroy mankind. Vayinachem Hashem and everything. The what? So then why use the employ Midas HaRachamim? It should have said Vayinachem Elohim. God he regret having made man. Why did he regret having had made man? Because they were bad. But he employs Midas HaRachamim. What is this trying to tell us? Let's say it. Speculate.
Not found something redeeming about them before.
Could be. And that's what it means, Vayitat Sev. So now tell me what's Vayitat Sev El Libo. Connect the whole thing. So tell me the whole thing. What is he so sad about? That I want to really use which Midah. But what can't I? I can't find anything. And how sad that makes me. Wow.
But now, from now on, he's going to use Rachamim.
That's correct. Says the Ramban. Despite the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the world with Midat Hadin, and his expectation is that we comply with the letter of the law every single time. Every single time. That was his expectation. Nonetheless, deep down in here, he feels, he really knows that what? We're never going to be able to succeed. And I'm always going to look for something redeeming to what? To spare the generation. When he searched the entire generation at that time, and he couldn't find something, that was the most painful thought that ever entered his mind. Me. me, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, created a human being who I can't identify one measure of good. That's what I speculate the Ramban has in mind. Telling us what's running through HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mind. That is, because he tells us that, why am I saying this? I might be crazy. Because he gave us the one hint. I'm telling you, you have to focus why it says Vayinachem Hashem. Rather, it should have said Vayinachem Elokim. Because what does Vayinachem mean? He regretted creating because he couldn't find anything good about them. So the Ramban tells us that number one, none of this was ever revealed to Noach, to Avraham, to Yitzchak and Yaakov, only to Moshe at the writing of the Torah. So what? Just tell me, what do you think and make of that? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to tell Moshe at the time when he writes the Torah? Why? Good, because the Torah represents eternity. Torah Emet. Torah Emes. Eternity. So what message will always remain with eternity? What message of our Pasuk will always remain? Lo Osif Lekha. I'll tell that to Moshe Rabbeinu. As he etches the words in the Sefer Torah, he will know that despite the fact that you, Moshe, witness trouble, after, you know how many times B'nai Yisrael were doing something, and what was God's initial reaction? I'm going to show you that. And what word does he use? Vayinachem Hashem al hara'ah asher diber la'asot li'amo. God changed his mind. Said, I'm not going to kill them. Why? He'll always find something good on our behalf. Yes?
But isn't God sad that he made man so perfect?
What?
Isn't God sad,
yes,
that he created something?
That's why it's Elohim. A perfect person is supposed to respond perfectly to his commander every single time. What?
He can't expect that.
No, he can expect it, but in reality he knows that it's never going to happen. But his expectations are there. Yeah?
I always thought of him growing up as a father. In the same way a father expects you to do certain things, and if you can't do it, he's sad, he's sorry, but he still loves you.
Could very well be. That's a very good imagery. But it's who expects every time that you, every single time. That's a tough father. Yes. Yeah.
But the last person there says, so are you suggesting that if Hashem is choosing Nida, Rachamim, then Noah, my favorite advice, but if we're to
that should not be so startling. We found plenty of midrashim that said that what? Noach is not such great tzaddik. Correct? Good point. We'll stop here.